Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that bubble shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
All right, today's episode of Hear That Podcast Growling is presented by Visa. Network working for everyone, and I'm Paul Danner Jr., Jay Morrison here, The Athletic, working for you. What's up, Jay?
Doing well. Not despite the Bengals being on a two-game losing streak, it just, I don't know, watching last night's Monday night game kind of felt like a playoff game. It just, even though I think Bengals fans want them to be more competitive right now, it feels like it's getting that time. It feels like it's getting bigger. It's way more interesting to be covering a team in the race than what we've done the last few years. So I'm looking forward to this final 4 weeks.
Can I say one thing quickly before we dive in here?
Sure.
Now that we're withdrawn from it enough and people have kind of maybe you can come a little bit more to reality, can everybody just kind of say one thing together? Sunday's game was fun.
Yes.
Sunday's game was fun. There were so many highs and lows and interesting decisions and high-level play. This was not a close game like Bengals-Dolphins 2019 became a close game on a comeback. Okay, this was high-level play, high-stakes playmaking on both sides to win an overtime game. This was not teams junking it all over the place. When we talk about big games, relevant games at Paul Brown Stadium that are fun to watch, even though it ended poorly, even though it ended on Brandon Ayuk one arm over the pylon, that was fun. That's what you get when you have a quality, relevant team this time of year. And I think everybody should come back and take, you don't always win those games, but it sure was. And from a perspective of just watching football, that was a fun atmosphere.
It was. It was just fun to allow yourself to think. Like, I was already kind of crafting in my head the story. If they win that game, it's maybe one of the most significant wins since I've been covering the team. Coming back from 14 doesn't sound like a huge comeback, but to do it against a team fighting for a playoff berth, to do it twice in one season, it would be the 10th largest comeback in franchise history if they had done it. It felt like it was going to be so significant and so huge to pull that out. And I think that's maybe why it hurts fans more to see them lose it. But it was a really, really enjoyable game. That fourth quarter, I quit taking notes. I just sat there and watched it. Normally I'm writing down every play and taking notes. I just quit doing that. I just kind of got in the moment and just watched the game.
Yeah, and you know what? There's going to be more of those.
Yes.
Because they only get bigger as we go forward. We got a bunch of stuff to get to today. I want to thank everybody that joined the live room that we did yesterday. I really enjoyed it. And Jay, we were talking beforehand. You did too. I think it was cool to hear from people. And now that we've kind of got a good feel for what it is, and we're going to do it every week. You guys gave us a good response that you seem to enjoy it. So we're going to try to keep doing those on Mondays and after lunch hour after games. And you guys keep coming in. And I wish we could have gotten everybody's questions. There were so many. We didn't have time to get to everybody. So we're going to try to keep an eye on who asks some every week. And so we make sure that we get new people in and ask all these questions, because it was great to hear from you. Great to just have that conversation. And I'm glad that so many of you seem to enjoy it showing up in there. So we will have that again next week on Monday. Jay, you're going to be flying back. So we'll see. You may just be getting me solo. I don't know if that's good or bad for you folks, but we'll have you taken care of as Jay comes back from Denver. I'm not cleared to fly yet, Jay. Just disappointing because I love Denver.
Yeah, and let's not forget that a delayed flight is always in play. I could be on the live room from a terminal waiting to see when my flight is actually going to depart. So we'll just play it by ear.
we'll be able to hear the sadness in the background of people sitting waiting for a flight out of Denver as the snow. Actually, it's supposed to be really nice in Denver this weekend.
It is.
50s, no snow, no rain, no precipitation in the forecast for like a 10-day stretch up there. So you're getting lucky. This trip had blizzard written all over it.
It did, and I'm doing what I did for Vegas, where I'm going on Friday just to try to, because I've never been to Denver, so I'm going to do a little sightseeing. Might go see the Shining Hotel, but yeah, I'm looking forward to getting out there and seeing it in nice weather.
Anybody going to Denver, I'll recommend the same thing I'm going to recommend to anybody. Take the day trip down to Colorado Springs, do Pikes Peak, do Garden of the Gods. It is like one of the coolest places I've ever been. I love those spots. But that's enough. We got to get into some stuff. Let's we'll have Mo on in a little bit. We'll be talking about his thoughts on conservative play calling, because I think you've heard enough of ours. But we'll talk kick returner, punt returner. You'll hear from special teams coordinator Darren Simmons. We'll get into a little bit of playoff picture. And we've got a fun offshoot of yesterday's live room planned for you, and a funny question that came up and circulated on social that we're going to pull out. It was Ja'Marr Chase being referenced as one of the most frustrating Bengals of all time, which we found quite funny. And so we have we're going to do a draft of most frustrating Bengals of all time whose last name starts with the letter C, just to show you how many more frustrating Bengals there are than potential offensive rookie of the year, Ja'Marr Chase. That'll be a fun little thing we're going to do at the end of the show here. The AJ Green went over 10,000 yards last night.
Yeah. I didn't even know he was getting close. That was really cool to see.
For the Cardinals who lost that game to the Rams, it's funny. And, you know, I'm not going to pull out a Hall of Fame debate here in the middle of this show. But when you get into that, you cross that 10,000 yard club, you know, it's a different deal. And there'll be more people in it now. You era adjusted stuff is going to be a big deal as you look forward. I mean, he's kind of, I will say he's not going to make the Hall of Fame. I think the injuries at the end of his career derailed that quest. He has a very nice resume. He'll be in the Bengals Ring of Honor. But you know, he's kind of on that outside, and you know, he's never been an all pro, not, you know, never been a first team all pro. It hurts you. You're like compared next to Julio, and I hate how perception plays, but it plays, and Julio's numbers are ridiculous, and he's, you know, gonna be that guy who's gonna get in. And you played in Cincinnati, you never made playoff runs. It's hard. And he has had a great career, but I think if he would have stayed healthy in 18 and maybe 19 were similar to the level he was playing at, and he was up in 1,200 total yards and maybe had a little bit more a success, you could see it. But it's not gonna, but still, it's a heck of a milestone. And he does enter the conversation when you cross over that 10K though.
What if the Cardinals win the Super Bowl and he plays a significant role in that playoff run? Does the recency bias of that? I mean, he doesn't have a single playoff win, obviously. If he gets that title at the end of 10,000 yards and all the other thing he's accomplished, you think that would be enough to nudge him in?
No, I don't know. I mean, he would have to put together a Larry Fitzgerald type of playoff run, like Larry Fitzgerald did back, remember when he in 2009 or whatever, when he just went bananas. I mean, he's not that guy this season. He's having an okay season for himself. I mean, he's actually had a little bit, certainly had a resurgent season. You know, he's 15.6 yards per catch, which is more along the lines of what he is for his career. But, you know, his catch percentage is probably down a little bit. You know, I think he's having an okay season, but I don't see him having any kind of run like that or that pushing him over the top. I mean, I guess maybe there's always a chance if the Cardinals were a real team, maybe played in a Super Bowl or two over the next two or three years and he stayed a part of it and really had a second life like Andrew Whitworth. But I when you've got guys like, you know, we're going to be talking now about Steve Smith and Andre Johnson, you know, I still think I think Chad's resume is much better than AJ's. I mean, era adjusted, Chad has two all pros, first of all. I mean, and he had a 6-year run as one of the best. I mean, he has 5 seasons in the top 6 of the league in receiving yards, Chad does. AJ has 1 where he was 5th. That's it. I mean, you got to think about what he was doing at that time. You look at, and again, I'm not trying to turn this into a long Hall of Fame debate, but let's talk about guys that have 10,000 yards and multiple all pros. There's only 13 ever. Okay. And if you have 2, Henry Ellard, Chad Johnson, Steve Smith, Andre Johnson are in that fringe group. That, like, right outside of you get more than 2. 3 all pros and 10,000 yards, forget about it. Marvin Harrison, DeAndre Hopkins will be a Hall of Famer. Calvin Johnson, Randy Moss, Antonio Brown will be a Hall of Famer. Terrell Owens, Jerry Rice, end of list. No doubters eventually will get in, right? Mm-hmm. And then the next group is that group I mentioned, and you're debating them amongst each other. AJ's not even in that. He doesn't have a single all pro. I mean, to me, that's what is your high end? And AJ's not going to collect that here late in his career.
No. And, I don't want to open a second can of worms here, but you mentioned Andrew Whitworth, and it was interesting. Last night was his 60th. He was the first offensive lineman or tackle to start a game at age 40.
Left tackle.
And it was his 68th start since he left the Bengals. And I was just
career.
I tweeted it out. I was like, there is not a Bengals player, let alone offensive lineman or tackle, that has 68 starts since Andrew Whitworth left here. Trey Hopkins is most with 64. It's remarkable what he's done since he left the Bengals. And, I don't think that there's kind of this false narrative where the Bengals thought he was washed up. I don't think they thought he was washed up. They weren't willing to give, they thought it was coming.
Don't relitigate this, Jay. This is not the time to relitigate the Andrew Whitworth discussion.
Good for that guy, because we talked about, I think it was last week's pod, a very, very real chance of him getting to a Super Bowl this year and being the Walter Payton Man of the Year. I think anybody that ever crossed paths with Whit would root for the latter for sure. And I'm sure even some Bengals fans, if the Bengals can't get there, would like to see Whitworth get to the Super Bowl.
Whitworth's going to get in the Hall. I'm predicting it now.
Yeah.
He's going to get in, I think. We've talked about that a lot, particularly in the Willie Anderson debate, as that gets closer too, by the way, as he is a semifinalist, hoping to see how that turns out for him. All right, sorry about that. Just the AJ thing kind of took me, and I kind of went down an AJ wormhole before we started here, thinking about him and Chad and the Hall of Fame and things like that. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Trey Hendrickson might play this week. That's basically a good report on him. It is a back issue. You never want to see that, but as far as it could have been much more serious when you consider what it looked like. They're optimistic about him. He'll be limited early in the week and see how he feels. So maybe he plays this weekend, maybe he doesn't, but it doesn't appear to be a long-term thing. And Zach Taylor sounded optimistic about it. It doesn't really necessarily mean anything. He was optimistic last week about Trey Waynes, and Trey Waynes didn't end up playing. I got a little bit more of an answer on what exactly happened there. And I know we discussed it yesterday a little bit and Sunday afterwards. What went on with Trey Waynes? And as Zach Taylor sort of described it to me, it was a matter of roster gymnastics at the end. They're so low on linebackers, they had to call those linebackers up. Cheeto's playing on this bad ankle. How long is he going to last? And, you know, then you got into the Darius Phillips thing. Who's going to return and all this. It all blended together. The back of the roster was a mess of decisions, which is why they went right up to the wire trying to figure it out. I mean, literally to the minute, you know, of knowing who was going to be up and down. Now, the Trey Waynes decision was, look, ideally, you bring Trey Waynes back and you try to manage him into it. You manage him on a fifth on a snap count in his first game back because he's got three full practices. Maybe he looks good. Maybe he's felt good, but you still don't know what a full game. You don't. You're going to need him down the stretch. You don't want to do something because you tried to push him a little too hard in the first game back. You'd prefer to ease him in with 15 to 20 snaps, probably in some sort of sub third down sub package or first down sub package, whatever it is. And then maybe the next week he's full or something to that effect. Well, if you do that and Cheeto goes down in the third play of the game because you know he's going to be gritting it, he couldn't even finish. Now you have brought Waynes up instead of Vernon Hargraves as your healthy body, who now has to play a full game, and you're jeopardizing it. And they didn't want to get caught in that spot, so they just didn't make the move. How much of this is, you know, we kind of ranted a little bit about this after the game, but you know, it put them in a really tough spot of trying to figure that out. But I think for that fact, they're going to go through another week, and I think you got to feel like we will see a little bit. We will see him in Denver, I would think, now at this point.
Yeah, it feels like it. I mean, they're still thin at linebacker. That's still an issue. And there's still the question about Awuzie's foot. We talked to Awuzie yesterday, and he said it's something. He's confident he can play, but he said this is something he's going to have. It's week 14. It's going to be something he's going to have to battle for a while. So I would not be surprised to see Darius Phillips be a healthy scratch again. We'll get to this later about where they go with that spot, but it just, if Trey Waynes is able, that almost has to trump whatever is going on roster construction wise. You need to get him in there. And again, like you said, only three practices last week. He'll stack another three this week, and they would feel much better about him playing a whole game. Although it is a question of the whole thing about being in shape and being in football shape. Can he play a full game having not only played two in the last 2 years in the thin air in Denver? I mean, that is a real issue out there where, you know, it's something that guys struggle with, the breathing and all of that. So, I would imagine he could do at least a 60-70% snap load at corner, and maybe more. You just have to wait and see how that plays out.
Yeah, you can amp him up a little bit more in practice this week too. Mm-hmm. You know, to help close that gap. There's ways to cover that. So, at some point, Trey Waynes needs to play, and earn a couple of dollars out of that contract before they cut him. So, all right. So we talked a little bit about flexing yesterday, and I just wanted to mention this real quick for people who don't know. So you've got these Saturday games are now starting. The week 18, I mean, we talked about the Browns-Bengals game looking like it could be a definite candidate to be one of those flexes because they love to put those division, you know, deciding the division type games if it does come down to that. There's actually three flex spots for week 18. There's a Saturday at 4:30, a Saturday at 8, and then the Sunday at 8. So the chances of that game at Cleveland on December 8th, 9th weekend, or excuse me, January 8th, 9th weekend being a night game is getting very real. The chances of an all-day recovery from Great Lakes Christmas ales is... Although that may just be a drive up, Jay. I might have to consider sacrificing. I don't know. Big decisions on the horizon. We'll see what happens. But keep in mind, there's a chance you're going to be seeing a primetime showcase for that game with if the division is on the line for sure, with it either being Saturday or Sunday potentially. So just something to keep in the back of your mind.
My thought on that is that – go ahead. Well, I was going to say, I don't know that – they would be in play for one of those Saturday spots. It almost feels like that's going to be like a big market team that has playoff implications on the line. And a Bengals-Browns game still feels like it could be, you could have that win or go home element. And if you put them on Saturday, that's not necessarily the case, because the loser would kind of be waiting to see what shook out on Sunday. Whereas if you make that the last, very last game of the season, then that's when that comes into play. So I think if you're power ranking the three slots, I would say Sunday night is the most likely, and then Saturday at 4:30, second most likely, and then Saturday at 8:30 is the least likely. I just can't see them putting that game in primetime on a Saturday night.
Yeah, because the Ravens will still be in the mix there.
Yeah.
In some capacity, probably, if you're trying about it. Who knows? We'll cross that bridge later. Okay, let's talk a little bit about what the hell's going to happen at kick returner and punt returner. We talked to Darren Simmons yesterday, who had come down off of what I'm sure was a very frustrating, his blood pressure might've been pretty high. I don't know if he had to go to the doctor on Monday early to get that checked, but, a frustrating day for him where he saw two muffed punts, turnovers, a dropped kickoff, another one that was nearly a fumble, a missed field goal. You name it, he saw it happen to his group on special teams, which was supposed to be the one area the Bengals had the biggest advantage over the Niners, who've been a special teams mess all year. And Darren Simmons has been one of the continued solid groups. But I think you saw injuries that have been there all year sort of finally creep up in his room. People, we talked about how healthy they've been. The one thing that has happened, you have had a lot, the same amount of injuries to the back end of the roster, and that has really affected him. Particularly the linebackers are such a key part of what he does. And you know, you lose Akeem Davis Gaither, one of his best guys. You lose Jordan Evans, one of his best guys. You lose Marcus Bailey, who's one of his guys. I mean, you know, you can only chip away so much. You lose Brandon Wilson, who's one of his best guys. You can only take on so much water until you see it, and unfortunately it came back to bite them on Sunday. But the question is, what happens next to punt returner and kick returner, which turned into a total mess? And so we asked him about both of those spots. He kind of went on monologues a little bit on where that ends up. We'll know more on Wednesday is the big picture, but here's Darren Simmons talking about those two spots.
You anticipate Darius being the punt returner moving forward after this weekend?
Well, I think there's something we'll talk about, talk about here pretty quickly and try to get figured out. You know, I felt at the time that obviously he was having a rough go of it last night, or yesterday afternoon, last night, whatever you call it. And that's why we made the change in the middle of the game that we did. You know, just, you know, sometimes when you're snake bit, you can't afford to, have it happen again. So obviously we put Tyler back there, somebody that, again, we've got a great deal of confidence in, to handle the ball and really in any situation too. It's not something that, I certainly anticipated going into the game dealing with. But we haven't completely had all those discussions yet. I think it's something that'll work itself out here pretty quick though. We'll get figured out.
How much discussion was there after the first fumble of making the change then?
Well, I don't know that there's a whole lot of discussion then. You know, I just went to Darius and talked to him about making sure we just concentrate on handling the ball. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. There was a lot of discussion then. You know, but you know, between me and Zach, I guess you're referring to, or
yeah.
There wasn't any discussion after the first one. I just went to him and said, "We got to concentrate on the things. We got to concentrate on just handling the ball."
You look at kickoffs too. Obviously, were an issue. Do you have an idea on where you're going to go with kick returner going forward? Is that also something that's kind of in discussion at this point?
Yeah, I think that's also something that's in discussion too. There's a lot of stuff that goes on a Monday morning here at our facility when it comes to grading the tape and having some meetings. We just got done meeting with the players. I'm sure we'll talk about it, you know, as a staff and as a group, and decide how to go. What's the best way to go proceed and go forward from there? But yeah, we're certainly thinned out at that spot a little bit, and I certainly felt like we were snake bit there in the first half, to say the least. Felt like we couldn't catch a ball. I think the message that I got to the players was this afternoon was, we just got to concentrate on the things we got to concentrate on. When stuff goes bad or when things don't go right, we can't panic, you know. And sometimes I think that speaks a little bit to maybe our inexperience at some spots. I mean, it's no secret we've had some injuries to a lot of positions, in my group. And so there's some new faces in the crowd out there. So when things do go bad, we got to have a core group of guys that have been through the ringer together a little bit to kind of help pull it together. And we're lacking in some experience right now. We're lacking in some areas of guys playing together, you know, together here with us. Well, that's got to develop over the next couple games. You know, it's a continuing process for us right now. You know, where we're trying to, withstand the tidal wave of stuff going right now. But it's certainly something we got to work through, and we got to work through quickly.
All right, so there's Darren Simmons. You know, he's very honest about. I wouldn't call that a ringing endorsement for bringing back Darius Phillips, Jay.
No, he was also very honest. The Alex Erickson conversation came up, and he was basically saying, I didn't want to cut Alex. He's been worried about that spot since Alex left. And mm-hmm. I went back and looked, and since Alex entered the league, he has more fumbles and more lost fumbles on punts than any other punt returner, but he also had way more opportunities than any other punt returner. But yeah, I don't know that this whole thing is about trust. And can you trust Darius Phillips back there?
No.
It's one thing to not hit the hole and to dance around and maybe to even to muff a punt when a gunner is barreling down on you. But after dropping one, dropping a second one, when you've called fair catch and you know you're not going to get hit, that's the death knell. There is no way they can stick him back out there. Trent Irwin's kind of like Alex Erickson without the fumbles. Nothing flashy, but he gets 9 to 12 yards every return. He's sure-handed. Just stick him back there and know that you're not going to turn the ball over. You're not going to break one, but you're not going to have a catastrophic turnover either.
I will go back to, and this is one that would give Darren Simmons nightmares if he even heard me say this name. Brad St. Louis, the last long snapper before Clark Harris. Okay. When your confidence goes at certain spots on special teams, it's over. Okay. You go back to 2006, and Brad St. Louis all of a sudden couldn't snap, and they went to where did they go?
Denver. Like Christmas week. It was Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve in Denver in a must-win game, and they drive the length of the field for what should have been the game-tying touchdown, and Brad St. Louis, who had snap issues and lacked and lost some confidence after having a career not doing it, not having issues with it, had a bad snap in the worst spot, and they lose a game they had to have. I'm not here to bring up the past, okay? I'm not here to try to find parallels between 15 years ago, damn near 15-year anniversary of this game, okay? But when a guy in a spot like that, a high-leverage risk position like that, starts to lose confidence, it's over, okay? And you can't have Darius Phillips back there not confident. Because if you're thinking about it, you're not gonna do it, and he's gonna be thinking about it. Okay, I need somebody else back there. Me? Screw it. Tyler Boyd. Tyler Boyd's like he's gonna have a week. He's gonna have all week of catching punts again, and he's now done it in the game a few times. Tyler Boyd's got all the confidence in the world. I'm not worried about his decision making. He's not out there going to be out there trying to do big returns. You're just looking for safety anyway. And Tyler Boyd can run a little bit with the ball. He's certainly not a guy you're afraid to have the ball in his hands. He has no drops as a receiver all year. I'm comfortable with Tyler Boyd. It's late enough in the season. I'm not worried about his health on punt returns. Give me Tyler Boyd, the punt returner. And I'm okay with it. If it's a situation of, do we have the roster space to even activate Trent and Irwin? Otherwise, Irwin is the guy for me. But I have no problem putting Boyd. I want a confident dude back there who I'm comfortable holding the ball and being a playmaker. Okay. And a week to think about it and make sure he's totally ready for it in the spot. Give me Boyd. It's only for a few games at the end of the season and call it a day. And Phillips is a healthy scratch.
I think the downside that the one thing you worry about with putting Tyler Boyd back there is if he were to get hurt on special teams. But really, I'm running through my mind. I don't remember a punt returner ever getting hurt. I mean, I know it can happen, but you see it now too, where these receivers are so smart about, they don't go down like quarterbacks go down, but they get the yards they can get and they go down. They don't take unnecessary hits. And we saw him do that on one of his returns yesterday, where he's like, okay, I got what I could get. And he just went down. So yeah, I'm with you there. That, you know, if you are stressed for roster spots, then that kind of frees one up. You're not sticking someone in there just to do punt returns. It kind of opens you up elsewhere. And if I can, real quick, I have a Brad St. Louis story. It's typical Bengals. And it's, my daughter was in first grade. She is now 25 and a teacher herself, but she was in first grade and she sold the most, I think it was entertainment books in her school. And whoever sold the most in their school got to go to this luncheon at Paul Brown Stadium and meet a Bengal. So when we get down there, and I was like, seriously, the long snapper is the Bengal she gets to meet. But we do have a cute picture of her, and she got chosen to be, they did a random draw and they drew her name, and she got chosen to do a TV commercial with Brad St. Louis. And somewhere that is on a VHS tape in my house. But yeah, going way back on that one.
Can we get that VHS? Can you record the screen on that VHS tape? Maybe post that thing.
I will try my best to find it. We have a lot of VHS tapes and most of them are unlabeled, so it would be quite the search.
Brad St. Louis, also the center of another famous story in Bengals media lore, which is our good friend Kat Terrell, who covers the Saints for us now and used to cover the Bengals for ESPN, and our good friend Richard Skinner over at Local 12 had a day where Kat was working on a throwback story on Brad St. Louis. It was on long snappers, and it was kind of about the idea we talk about, our confidence and losing it and stuff like that. And no one, it was a great idea to catch up with him, and she had done it and done an interview over the phone. And after interviews one day, people had left their recorders on the table, and someone had left theirs. And Skinny thought it was his.
Identical model.
Yeah, it looked the same. So he thought it was his. And so to clear some space, because he's used to just clearing some space by deleting some things that are on the end, he deleted. And then all of a sudden, he deleted like three or four, I guess, files. And then realized, oh my God, this isn't mine, and deleted Kat's entire interview with Brad St. Louis. And it goes to anytime anybody leaves a recorder, ever, anywhere now, the same comments are made. And usually Kat ends up in a text chain at some point. It was a sad, sad moment. There's no worse feeling than knowing you lost an interview you really liked and needed and how hard it is to get those back. And I think we all felt for Kat that day, including Skinny, who apologized profusely.
Yeah, he was really torn up about it. And I thought Kat was going to cry. She was so upset. I think it was like an hour-long interview. It was really long. Yeah. And we've all had it happen of our own doing, screwing up and losing an interview. But to have somebody else do it, I thought Kat handled it remarkably well. There was never any tension between her and Skinny.
Who knew this would be Brad St. Louis week? I'm sorry, Bengals fans that have been around for that era. I remember watching that game specifically. It was at night. I was working on a desk in Key West, Florida, like putting out a newspaper in like a slot shift. And I remember watching that game and my jaw dropping on the floor. And I remember walking outside and being like, I can't believe what I just saw. I can't believe they blew the extra point on a snap. Because it was that run of games. They only had to win one. And Santonio Holmes took it to the house on the next week. All right, let's just take a quick break. Kick returner, what do you do here? You know? I mean, talk about confidence. I don't know that I'm putting Stanley Morgan back out there. That didn't go well. Okay. I'm healthy scratching Darius Phillips. Travion Williams?
Possibly.
I mean, Chris Evans. A running back. You're comfortable with him carrying the ball. He's done returning of kickoffs. I don't know what their comfort level is with him doing it. What else, you know, or they just feel like they need him as a in another spot on kickoff return. But I look at the roster and he's the name that pops out on me to get somebody else back there. But again, it's what's your comfort level with his catching and decision making. Either way, I don't know that there's a safe name that you're putting back there at this point.
Yeah, there's not a safe one, and it's the bigger spot, because at punt return you can just stick somebody back there that can fair catch it, whether they got room to run or not. Just stick somebody back there, and you've got that option. Kickoff, you don't. Yes, most kickoffs go out of the end zone, but if a team wants to kick it short and force you to try to return it, they can do that, and you better have somebody back there that's sure-handed and solid in decision-making. I like the idea of Chris Evans, but I don't know about putting a rookie in that spot, and first of all, he has to get healthy, but he would be an option. And then, you know, Puka, he didn't look great, but it was his first shot at it, and he got better as each return got better as the game went on. But again, that's a spot where you have to call somebody up from the practice squad, and you're tight on roster spots right now anyhow. So it's going to be interesting to see which way they go with that Sunday in Denver.
You know what's interesting? Think about how tight they were on roster spots, and they still were willing to keep Logan Wilson and not put him on IR. I mean, I think that goes to show mm-hmm. how much they think he's going to be back to play against the Ravens. Or else, you know, you're talking about a major miscue, because this has proven very important spots in the back end of their roster. And if he never even plays, it shows that that was, you know, the wrong call. Puka could end up being the guy. At least he's done it in a game before now. And you think he's got some playmaking ability. So maybe they do go back to Puka, seeing that the situation they ended up being in, and maybe, you know, the healthy scratch of Darius Phillips helps them do that. Maybe Marcus Bailey returning helps them do that to clear that linebacker spot. There's going to be another week of these roster gymnastics, and I think that's going to play a big role in where you see this thing end up. But for me, you know, it's just about, I think after last week, it should just be about avoiding disaster. A return would be nice, but it's not about the game breaker at this point. It's about, don't screw this up, okay? Let's not have another game where it ends up being about dumb special teams stuff. I want to talk a little bit about, Jay, you've got some stats on the playoff picture as we kind of look at it now. I mean, we've got all these teams in the middle, the Bengals and the Broncos, another week where everybody's got everything to play for. They just keep going through this part of the schedule, and they've now lost two games in a row, the potential for their first three-game losing streak of the season. They've bounced back off the two each time with big wins, but what happens now is they go back on the road, although I will say they've played their best football on the road this year. Mm-hmm. You know, in the big picture, when you talk about, I'm still wearing my must win armband. I haven't played the must win card yet. My one must win card yet. I haven't played it. Let's just say I'm holding it and kind of pulling on it a little this week, thinking about it. I'm not thinking about pulling the must win armband off, but I'm thinking about it.
History suggests it's not a must win. I know Bengal fans don't want to hear that, but you know, I was interested earlier this year. I think it was after they lost to the Browns and Jets back to back, and Zach said they were going to get it straightened out. And he said, "You look at any playoff team ever; they had a stretch where they lost two in a row." And yep, that's right. Most of them have. I went back. I was curious. Well, how many teams have come back from a three-game losing streak and made the playoffs? If that's what it ends up being, if they lose at Denver, it would be a three-game losing streak. They would be back to even at 7-7. It happens all the time. It's happened every year since 2001, and since the NFL merger in 1970, it's happened every year but 4 years. 2001, 1990, 1980, 1974. Those are the only years when a team with a three-game losing streak didn't make the playoffs. So you look at it now, the teams that are currently, if the playoffs started today, the teams that would be in, the 49ers, Colts, and Rams all have 3-game losing streaks this year, and teams that are within one game of that final playoff spot in their conference who have had a 3-game losing streak: Broncos, Dolphins, Eagles, Saints, Steelers. So it's going to happen again this year. You have to figure. So, you know, why not the Bengals? Again, nobody wants to see that happen. They don't want to see it tested. But it doesn't feel like this is an absolute must win. But it would be a huge win if they could get it and get to 8-6. The interesting thing here is we could see a record this year. All those teams that had 3-game losing streaks and made the playoffs, the record for longest losing streak in a season and still making the playoffs is 6. The Bears did it last year. The Panthers did it in 2014, and your 1970 Cincinnati Bengals lost 6 in a row and came back to make the playoffs for the first time as a team. The Dolphins, who I mentioned are 1 game out of the playoff spot right now, they have a 7-game losing streak on their resume. If they end up making the playoffs here this year, that would be a record.
It's unbelievable.
Although, we've seen some of these teams that have had these schedule advantages because the bottom tier is very – if you're not in that middle, like, that bottom is bad. Mm-hmm. And particularly you've had, you know, the ability to pick off the Jags, the Texans, the Jets of the world. Of course, the Bengals are like, oh, that Jets game. Maybe coming back to – we still talking about that Jets game? We sure as hell are.
Yep.
What did we say after that game? That's going to be the one you look back on. Imagine you're sitting here right now. You're tied with the Raiders. You're in first place.
Yeah.
If you hold on to a double-digit lead at the Jets and Mike White, it's just gross. It's just gross to look back on. I'm going to be holding on to my must-win armband this week, though. I'm tugging on it, but I'm not taking it off. I'm not playing the must-win card at all. Next week, though, feels like it might be the one that I pull it out there for.
Yeah.
I might pull that one out next week.
If they win at Denver, you still going to pull it out against the Ravens?
I think they got to put the Ravens in their rear view.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the one that they've got. I mean, I might want to save it for the Browns game at the end, but I don't know that the Browns game is going to mean what they want it to mean if they can't take care of business against the Ravens.
You can't play the armband if it's a mathematical certainty that it's a must win. So you got to play that armband before.
Why not? That's the whole point of the must win armband. That's the whole point of my argument. It's never a must win until a mathematical must win, really. Otherwise, you're just saying you're taking a chance on it being the must win. Because you only get one that you must win. Because if you don't win it, then it should be over. That's my whole point. So I could absolutely save it for week 18 and a mathematical must win. I'm against this whole concept. This is the problem with the willy-nilly must win usage. This is the whole problem.
I'm looking forward to a listener.
People out here, they can just throw around these must wins all year long and then they just play the next week and they can make up for it. I enjoy calling that. I always wanted to meet William Nilly. You know, the original dude who just said stuff all over the place and they started calling him Willy Nilly and that's how I like to think of the origin story of Willy Nilly. William J. Nilly, you know, was a really good dude. Then he just kind of got out of control. So
there has to be one of those that exists. But I was going to say that I'm looking forward to a listener or subscriber who's also a seamstress actually making us must-win armbands and sending them to us.
Oh. Look, if Mo can get a I'm having fun t-shirt, I'm on the Cincy Shirts podcast today. They're having me on. We plotted it like a month and a half ago. I am going to ask for must-win armbands. They need to get in the armband business. When you wear it around until you've played your must win card, and then you got to turn it over. It's like the one side is red, says, you know, it's like the Brazilian steakhouse, right? I'm good, and then you turn it over the other way. That's what I want. One color, one says must win. The other one is a different color that says no more must win available, you know, or something catchier than that. But I'll leave that to the Cincy Shirts people. But I'm bringing it up. Speaking of. Let's get to our good friend Mo Egger, who you can buy his I Am Having Fun shirt from Cincy Shirts and to benefit a very good cause. Let's bring in Mo. Mo, let's see how he tweeted this week. What's the numbers, Jay?
Down week for Mo. He only 71. I think not having the college football playoff show and not having a Bearcat game and having the Crosstown shootout not really be dramatic.
I never tweet during the Crosstown shootout. That is no win for me. I sent one tweet after the game. I never tweet during the Crosstown shootout.
So it was a game changer. It goes to show.
Yeah.
Man, 71, that's a career low for this, at least since we've been tracking it.
It is.
All right. Well, so we still had plenty to choose from, though. And I think we're going to start here. Jay and I have probably talked ourselves out now, having done the walkout and yesterday's live room, with the major discussion point being what the major discussion point has been on your tweet was the obvious one. Bengals got too conservative on their overtime drive and paid for it. What are your thoughts now, having kind of a couple of days to reflect on that? As it surrounds the, you know, the bigger picture of people wanting to scream and yell about the head coach and play caller.
Yeah. I'll give Zach Taylor an opportunity to show that he's learned from that. He certainly expressed a great deal of regret, after the game with you guys and on Monday. And so I'm as interested in seeing how this gets handled moving forward as I am yelling and screaming about it, but that was worth yelling and screaming about. And to me, I was at the game with four other dudes, and I said, if I'm standing next to Kyle Shanahan, and this is after the Bengals kicked the field, I said, if I was standing next to Kyle Shanahan and I presented him with two different options, one of which was Joe Burrow is going to keep throwing, or Joe Burrow is going to hand it off twice, and then you're going to get Nick Bosa one-on-one versus Isaiah Prince, and then they're going to kick a field goal, but you don't know what's behind the other door if they throw three times, which would you prefer? And I said, I think Kyle Shanahan would say, let's roll the dice, get my offense back on the field, hand it off a couple of times, give me a third down play with Nick Bosa one-on-one versus Isaiah Prince, and then let's go. So to me, I always kind of view these things through the filter of what would the other coach want you to do? And to me, Kyle Shanahan had to be internally going, great, keep handing it off. Let's Joe Burrow just carved us up in the fourth quarter with some of the best throws I've ever seen. One of the best quarters a Cincinnati quarterback has ever had. He gets you in position to score and completely go conservative. So to me, that's always how I look at those things. I am as interested, however, in if a similar type of situation presents itself, and it's having a feel for the game. It's not just throwing for the sake of being aggressive. It's riding the hot hand. It's a San Francisco secondary that was dinged up going in. They suffered some dings during the game. Your quarterback is playing at an unbelievable level. He's finding every conceivable target. How do you not take one shot at the end zone? And you can tell me all you want about two high safeties and light boxes. Dude, you've got Joe Burrow. This is why you drafted him. You're entrusting him to not make a mistake. You're entrusting him to not put you in a situation where he throws a pick, where everything unravels. You ride the hot hand. You have a feel for the game. And I don't think Zach showed that he had a feel for the game on Sunday. So now moving forward, how does that change? Does this become the sort of thing that we look back on and go, okay, this was a bit of a pivot point in the way that Zach handles Joe, in the way that Zach handles situations like that? Or does it become emblematic of a coach who talks about being aggressive but doesn't do it? And there were other moments in that game, the two fourth downs, the way they came out to start the second half with three straight runs. There were other situations in that game where you're like, dude, come on, foot on the pedal here. But if there ever was a moment where you're like, come on, man, ride your hot hand, use your quarterback, take a shot, it was in overtime at the 26-yard line.
It's kind of what I wrote about. I mean, there were four major opportunities to trust Joe Burrow to be a big player for you, which what have we seen him in every opportunity when you've given him that, whether it's fourth and an eyelash against Minnesota and you throw it deep to Uzama, or any of these things we've talked about where, you know, you can't zero me against Jacksonville. These moments where you've given him these big spots where he comes through for you, and you had four chances to hand the ball to Burrow and say, big moment, big risk, I want nine to, you know, pay a bet off for me. And all of them were essentially chosen to not do so. And I think that's where you feel like it's like, man, play like you have a great quarterback.
Yeah, Zach's been very honest since he's been here, but I don't know if he would honestly answer the question here. I wonder, because you mentioned the shots they took against Minnesota, Jacksonville. Joe Burrow wasn't leading the NFL in interceptions at that time. I wonder how much of it was take what the defense gives you and how much of it was Burrow hasn't thrown an interception yet today. He's thrown 14 this year. Do I have full trust in him to make the right decision here? And really, even if you don't, you should still do it because your defense has been so great at sudden change anyhow, and San Fran's going to start way down in their end. But I don't know if Zach would answer that question honestly if those play calls on first and second down at the 26 were related to how many interceptions Joe Burrow has thrown this year.
And I don't expect Zach Taylor or any NFL head coach to look at it the same way I do in the stands. But for me, if Joe throws a pick, he throws a pick. I can live with that. And then whatever happens, happens. And I know that's not necessarily, excuse me, how a coach thinks. But in that moment, yeah, we're all aware Joe has made some mystifying decisions in critical situations. I mean, it was funny when they got the ball in the first play of overtime, I sort of said out loud, last time Joe was in this situation, he threw one of the dumbest picks I've ever seen against Green Bay. And so, but to me, we've talked a lot about how those mistakes are part of the process, part of the maturation process. Well, then so too is going 95 yards after getting sacked on first down with the game and the season kind of hanging in the balance. That's a big moment. That's a big moment in his progression. And that's the most recent one. He just orchestrated this unbelievable drive and not dinking and dunking the ball down the field either, making some tight window throws. The fourth and five play is one, and Jamar Chase made a great play as well, staying in bounds. But the fourth and five play is one of the great individual efforts I've seen in my life from a Cincinnati Bengals quarterback. You've trusted Joe Burrow with a lot of things. That can't be undone because he's thrown a few picks that we take as sort of part of the growing process. If he would have thrown a pick in that situation, I think all of us would have said, you know what? You went down with your best guy. You went down with your best option. You went down by doing what is supposed to be your team's bread and butter. And by the way, it would be one thing if Joe Mixon was sitting on a 170-yard day and he had just been gashing San Francisco's defense. He hadn't been that productive. Those two runs weren't bad, but still, play the percentages. And based on the moment, the percentage of Joe Burrow delivering in that, it doesn't even necessarily have to be throwing into the end zone. I mean, just throw passes, use your guys, use your weaponry. Maybe somebody makes a play and catches one, you know, catches an 8-yard out and runs it into the end zone. They hadn't run the ball that effectively. They had thrown the ball incredibly effectively starting early in the fourth quarter. And to not go down with what was your best weapon, for lack of a better way of putting it, in that game, was, and for my money still is, maddening.
There is no doubt. Part of the problem I have is, and we talk a lot of times on here about how, I mean, every fan base hates their offensive coordinator or their play caller or whoever. Like, they just do. I mean, there's nobody who's like, oh, I love him. I mean, Kyle Shanahan was supposed to be fired a couple months ago, and he's one of the best in the business. But I do think that pinpointing this, that is, while we can talk about feel for the game and things, it's you're also not getting to, you know, Zach Taylor's more than that, and it's not just about one or two calls that you make over the course of a game, because over the course of the last month or two, this is still, does he get no credit for what this offense has become? Does he get no credit? I feel like people are immediately, of course, and maybe we should stop listening to the vocal minority of the just screaming fire. We got to do something different. And it's like, I don't know. I see an offense that has been fantastic for a while now. Do we have problems in certain spots? Do you worry about field? Yes. But I just hate that it turns into this bigger picture. They need a new offensive coordinator. Fire everybody. It's like, I don't know. I see an offense that's one of the best in the league in points per drive for a long while now.
I don't disagree with that. I don't know if it's necessarily about firing Zach Taylor. I just think it's about him coaching better. Like, there's a lot to really like about the direction this franchise has gone in under Zach, and you guys have written about it and podcasted about it. And God knows I've talked about it. There's a lot to like, and are his fingerprints all over their offensive successes? Look, 2 weeks ago, I thought that was a masterclass in play calling against Pittsburgh. It was run the football, pick on the other team's weakest corner. It might not have been high level stuff, but if you watch that team, you would have thought, holy cow, this offense is being orchestrated by an absolute mastermind. To me, it's just about in those moments in which the game is hanging in the balance, coach better, do better. And don't just talk about being aggressive, be aggressive. By the way, I would have loved to have seen Zach go for two after one of the two fourth quarter touchdowns. A 2-point conversion is a 50-50 play. Okay, so if you get the first one, you're good. All you got to do is score a touchdown and kick the PAT. And if you don't get the first one, it's a better than average chance you're going to get the second one. And I just I don't necessarily feel like that's just a Zach Taylor thing. I love laughing at football coaches because they sleep on their couches and they never see their families and they love to tell you how hard they work. But they also like to tell you how they fear nothing. We're going to do what we want. We're going to be aggressive. But then when push comes to shove, they never are. And Zach has shown moments in his tenure of progressiveness and aggressiveness, but I just didn't see it to the extent that I wish I would have on Sunday. And to me, it's look, I think at the end of every season, everybody's job should be up for examination. I think it's completely fair to look at Zach Taylor and examine the entire body of work. And I think when we do, there's going to be more in the pro column than the con column. But that con column doesn't get ignored. And in that con column is what we saw on Sunday. They're going to have four probably really close games. I mean, these next four, the Denver game, they're a 1.5 underdog as we sit here today. Chances are if they beat Kansas City and Baltimore, those aren't going to be blowouts. Same for Cleveland. So they're going to have some more push come to shove moments in which the outcome of the season is going to be hanging in the balance. What is Zach Taylor's role in determining the outcome of those games? And if faced in a similar situation, I'm not necessarily talking about an overtime first and 10 from the 26, just I'm talking, hey, our quarterback is red hot. This is our guy. Let's ride him here. It would be the same thing if it's like Joe Mixon is ripping off 8 yards a carry and you stop giving him the football. It's the same thing. It's using what works and it's trusting the guys you should trust. And again, you know, look, Nick Bosa is an absolute terror. Third and 10 or whatever it was, third and three, I think, third and two, third and three. Game hanging in the balance. Isaiah Prince needs help on Nick Bosa. Coming out of the timeout, you can't give George Kittle 8 yards of room on third down when he's gassed your defense all day. Using a timeout to determine that we're going to kick a field goal. Things like that. I just want to see him improve upon. You know, if your kid makes a mistake, you don't want to get rid of your kid. You just want them to do better. And as clumsy of an analogy as that might be, I want the head coach of this team in moments like that to do better. He's not going to bat 1,000. He's not going to get it right every single time. But again, that to me in overtime was painfully obvious what they should do. And it also reflected, I think, over the course of the game, a lack of just aggressiveness and decision-making that I would like to see change moving forward. And I think it's going to have to change moving forward.
There's your next t-shirt. Zach Taylor is like my kid.
And on the back it says, don't get rid of your kids.
Don't get rid of your kids.
Unless, like, you know, I guess in that analogy, like the police or child services would be like the owner. Just come in and take it away.
We're taking them away.
Taking them away. We have a fun exercise that we are going to do because we there's been sort of joking going around about a question asked in our live room yesterday where it was essentially about at some point do you lose a little bit of trust in Ja'Marr Chase and take him off the field on third downs? And it was out there like, wait, was someone talking about benching Ja'Marr Chase? And it was kind of this fun joke. And at one point in the question, it was mentioned he's the most frustrating Bengals player I've ever seen. And I pointed it out that, well, you probably haven't watched a lot of Bengals games then because there's a half a century worth of frustrating Bengals that you might want to look into. So we are going to do a draft of not just the most frustrating Bengals players, but just the most frustrating Bengals players whose last names start with C. But Jay and I think there might be a clear-cut number one draft pick, so we're going to ask you to decide who the number one pick is. Jay and I both have a bet that we have made over who we think you will select as the answer to this question.
Okay.
And it differs. The question is, what player in Bengals history whose last name begins with C has the most receiving yards? What player in Bengals history whose last name begins with the letter C has the most receiving yards?
Isaac Curtis.
Isaac he Curtis wins. Paul is wins. Correct. And I thought you would get it correct. I believed in you, Mo. I had faith. Jay thought you would go back and get to Chris Collinsworth and stop.
No, Isaac Curtis, first of all, is my dad's all-time favorite player, maybe my dad's all-time favorite athlete. So I'm well-versed in the work of Isaac Curtis, and Isaac Curtis was a phenomenal player. Chris Collinsworth was a very good player, and I believe, and I think he's sixth all-time in receiving yards in the history of the franchise, and maybe I'm overstating him a little bit, but if you're having a discussion about the great 85s in franchise history, Isaac Curtis might not be the greatest, but he's in the conversation because that number has been well worn by pass catchers who have played for the Cincinnati Bengals.
He's a reason why it's legendary. And I love Tyler Eifert, but more so than Tyler Eifert. Isaac Curtis, honestly, he's always one of those. We opened this actually with a receiver Hall of Fame discussion talking about AJ Green crossing 10K and how much better Chad's case is than I think anybody gives it credit for. Mm-hmm. Isaac Curtis's case is actually better than people give it credit for when you look at era adjusted stats and how different he was from everybody else in his generation. Now it will never get the credit, and there's probably not enough there to get him in, and certainly not from this market, as we have expounded on time and time again, but it does not get enough credit for how good it is, and I look forward to his name being up in the Ring of Honor one day.
Isaac Curtis, by the way, third in franchise history in receiving yards, 7,101. Chris Collinsworth, fifth, 6,698.
All right, so I get the number one overall pick in our most frustrating Bengals, whose last name begins with the letter C, draft, which I'm very excited about. Mo, I will join you on ESPN 1530 from 3 to 4 here this afternoon on Tuesday. I look forward to that. Maybe you can come up with your most frustrating Bengals, whose last name begins with letter C, or I can open up the whole franchise to you.
Yeah, I was going to say, do I just get the letter C? Do I get
maybe on your show we'll open it up to every letter and we'll pick our top threes.
Okay. That'll be the game today. Top three most frustrating Bengals
of all time.
Ja'Marr Chase is not going to be on that list.
Not on the list.
I don't think there's anybody on the current team that's going to be on that list.
No, because there's a long list from some lean years of frustrating.
I felt bad because I retweeted the tweet that Jay sent, and I did something that I typically do not do, is that I retweeted it. I listened to the teaser. I don't know what you guys call it. Mm-hmm. I listened to it, thought it was funny, wanted people to listen to it. I have since listened to the entire thing, and it's a really cool exercise that you guys are doing. So I felt bad that I might've misrepresented, first of all, the quality of the question you guys got, because there were a lot of really good questions. And that's just not something I do. I don't like it when people do it with my work, where you just take a snippet and that becomes the thing. I hate, you know, never click the link guy. So I felt bad, but I do think it generated a fun discussion.
I actually appreciated the question, and I appreciate people that come in and kind of a little bit wearing their emotions on their sleeve and saying stuff like that. And it's fun to talk about. And I hope that we do get more ridiculous questions. I enjoy that aspect of it.
So typically for a 1 o'clock game, the post game call in show goes until like 7 o'clock. I was out and about doing stuff at 10 o'clock Sunday night, believe it or not. And we were running a post game show until 11:30 at a Frickers. So how do you want to imagine those phone calls were?
I actually was talking about that. I said, I thought my favorite parts about the live room was how well represented the questions were, how interesting and nuanced the questions were. I said, I have hosted post game shows on your air before, and that is not how it goes when you open the lines.
No, I haven't had to do it in a very long time. It's my least favorite thing in our industry to do is a post game show.
Yeah.
And other people love it. It's my least favorite thing to do, and I think you understand why.
Yeah. I am looking forward to going all in on the entire franchise list with you this afternoon, Mo. Thanks for joining.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, great to hear from Mo, as always. So Mo has set the stage for us, Jay.
Yeah.
Before we get to the growler bet and run passer boot results, we're going to do our draft here. Most frustrating Bengals player in history whose last name starts with the letter C. The media guide makes this easy because we have every single player listed right in front of us. There's about, I didn't actually count them, what do you think, 75 players?
That sounds about right, yeah.
About 75 players whose last name begins with the letter C who have ever played for the Bengals. Now, I have the number one overall pick, and I do think there is an obvious one here. But how much am I holding injury over someone's head for frustration versus how much am I holding over the fact that they were supposed to come here and fill a very important role and they were did not do that at all and were kind of jerks about it?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, that is because there's two injury guys on this. When you were talking about maybe a sleeper pick, I thought that's the direction you were going, but that is, I guess that's up to, that's your call, which way you want to go with it.
I will not go Greg Cook. I will not, I'm not going to include Greg Cook, his injury. I think it's almost too unfair to do, but it's the same conversation kind of does hover over our clear number one pick, and I'm going to go ahead and do it. It's Kajana Carter.
Yeah.
I mean, Kajana Carter is my number one pick. I mean, what's more frustrating? It's really by no fault of his own that this guy who you traded up number one overall pick and never really but he still sticks around. So the frustration lingers. Yeah. He's around. You hope that he's going to be that guy. He's never that guy. And he's like a goal line back for Corey Dillon at one point. I mean, there was just like, it was so frustrating, even the fact that he still stuck around afterwards, because you just keep thinking about what this guy was supposed to be and such a picture of what they hoped and never became for the best. So, yeah, I think it has to be Kajana Carter at number one.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Greg Cook where, you know, his injury was pretty much – that ended it. It was he didn't stick around, and Kajana stuck around. I can't remember what game it was, but there was a game when Kajana was returning kicks, and – He caught the kickoff and ran and did like a baseball slide right around the second base cutout at Riverfront Stadium. And the place just went crazy booing him. And it turns out he was told to do that. It was a time issue. But I just remember he could never. And you're right. The ACL injury, no fault of his own. And he could never win the fan base back after that because the expectations were so high after what he did at Penn State, trading up to be number one. It was that's the reason we had Mo do this, because it was obvious whoever got the number one overall pick was going to take Kajana. So I know what direction you're going, and this I don't know that I would have even had it be a sleeper pick for number one, but I'll go Lavernius Coles.
Yeah,
because that's the guy that they was supposed to come in. They've had a few of these receivers that they brought in that were supposed to be difference makers, and it just never panned out for whatever reason. And I can't, what year was Lavernius? Was it
09?
09, yeah. And you know,
never had anybody
year.
Like it was Chad on one side who was kind of on the down end a little bit, and they really needed that extra person to take that pressure off of him and sign Coles. And then do you remember his nickname
in the media? That was before I covered the team.
PMF, which stood for prickly mother.
There've been a few of those in the Bengals history too.
There's been more than a few of those in the Bengals room. And I think it wasn't just with the media that he was PMF. And so he not only you're not doing your job, but the people around here are not real fond of the way you're carrying yourself. You talk about frustrating. Lavernius Coles is a valid, solid pick for you. All right. I have another one, and this is on from a different level. It's not because he was like a high-end pick or a lot of money or attention. I'm going Orson Charles. Huh? Hey, don't wave your gun in the air on the side of the highway when we might need you to play for us this year. Like, Orson Charles is never going to be great. He was a fourth-round pick. They, like, converted him to a fullback, tight-end type guy. Mm-hmm. And then that day he woke up. It was frustrating for me. It was like an early off-season morning. And then it's like, I think your guy was speeding on the highway in Kentucky, waving his gun in the air at somebody, and he's been arrested. Can you not do that? It's pretty frustrating when that happens, right? So he's my number two pick.
What about a Bengals draft for worst highway decision by a Bengals player? Is it Orson Charles speeding with a gun, or is it Tremaine Mack falling asleep on the suspension bridge?
Worst highway decision. That'll be next week. I got to think more about that one, because I'm sure there's some other poor highway decisions that we could run through. Who's your number two pick?
I'm going to go Will Clark. It just felt like he fit the template of what they were at the time with these big, long defensive ends. And it was, you know, kind of be, he's going to be the succession with, Michael Johnson getting older, and he just, I can't, he was a second round pick. If I remember, he was second or third. I think he was a second
round pick.
Third. Yeah. He was behind Margus. Yes. And it just, it, he just never panned out for whatever reason. And he looked like he looked like the part. He looked like the template that they rely on at defensive end. And it just, it never worked out for that guy.
Okay. So I am going with my third pick. This is a hard one for me, but I'm going to say John Copeland. John Copeland was a top 10 pick. He was supposed to be this great dude come out of Alabama, and he was fine. Like, he was fine. But that's what made him frustrating. He was just fine. And he was supposed to be so much more. It was like the string of dudes that were just fine. And but he was out there all the time being just fine in the 90s for teams that were less than fine. And so for me, when you talk about frustratingness, John Copeland, my third pick.
I didn't even have him on my list because you're right. I just didn't realize that the expectations were so high for him. I thought he had a decent career. And
yeah,
I guess I didn't
think. He was fine.
I didn't give enough thought to this, but my next pick, and this guy, he was frustrating, but he was also very entertaining. I'm going to go with Anthony Collins.
Oh, I have him on my list. Yeah.
Yeah. That year, I think it was 2013, and Witt was hurt, and Anthony Collins started the opener in Chicago and just blank Julius Peppers, and you see all this potential, and he did get a decent contract extension, and after that year he never lived up to it. He was not who you thought he could be, and you know, we still quote him to this day, because his favorite thing to do in his bio in the Bengals media guide or game day program was sit my ass down. And so now during training camp, whenever the Bengals go to a special teams drill, we all say we're going to pull the AC and sit our ass down.
Yeah. Also well known for being the other guy at Jerome Simpson's house when the mail showed up with weed in it, and so did the cops. And everyone was like, look, no, this is AC. He was just happened to be there. Okay. It wasn't his weed. He was just there to play video games. I'm sure they would have just played video games and not touched the weed. It's totally cool. AC had nothing to do with that. The best part of AC's story is that he signs a massive contract in Tampa Bay, gets his deal, and like barely plays a game there. Cause you know what he did when he got his money?
Sat his ass down.
Oh, it's great. Good choice. I'm going to wrap it up. Can I combine two picks? And because they're kind of the same but different.
Okay. They're
little used tight ends.
Mm-hmm. I know
Daniel,
who you're one.
Daniel Coates.
Oh, no.
And Chase Kaufman.
Yeah. Chase I had on my list.
Chase is probably a pick just because he was a high pick. He was a third round pick who like just couldn't block a soul and was just failed out. But Daniel Coates played. He had the worst hands of anybody who's ever been an eligible receiver in Bengals history. And it was like every time he dropped the ball, it was just make everyone just. It's like that guy on the basketball team that thinks he can shoot threes but just can't. Titus Rubles, for UC fans, might come. And ever you hear the moan and the groan whenever they even go to shoot a three. It's like they go to pull up. Everyone's like, oh, no. And that was Daniel Coates anytime the ball went in his direction. Just as a dump off. Like, can you just pretend you can catch for a second? Would drop it every time. So I'm going to – Coates, if you wanted to pick Kaufman, you can, but – that's all.
Was it Kaufman or was it Colin Koshar? Who was the one that Mike Brown wanted to switch to defensive end on?
It couldn't have been Kaufman. Had Koshar. Koshar was undrafted.
Okay. Yeah, that's where I remember. My last one, I'll go Shaq Calhoun, just because he had a history in the league, and you know, the offensive line was so bad, and they bring him in and you think, okay, this guy could be not a long-term answer, but could be a quick fix, and he was not.
He didn't last a series. He not only wasn't a quick fix, he didn't last a series, and they put in Quentin Spain, who had been there 2 days and done a walkthrough in the coach's office.
I think he lasted one series. They didn't replace him mid-series. I think it was one
after
series.
After one series.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry. Didn't last to the second series. all right. That was fun. I hope people enjoyed that. We had a little fun. Ja'Marr Chase not on the list.
When you deliver the high highs,
I understand. I do agree. I do understand the frustration. And we have talked about trust levels with him. And at what point do you start to think about that? We have had that conversation.
Yeah.
But then it always ends the same. But when you have the high highs that he does create and what he does bring to you, there's no way you can start having that conversation. And I don't, and you can't be frustrated when those levels of high highs and playmaking that he can bring you do happen. I get the frustration with the drops and the contested catches, and we certainly discuss that, and it's a valid point. But when you talk about what real frustration looks like, it's this list we just dropped on you.
Yeah, Ja'Marr Chase might not even be in the list of most frustrating Bengals players with an apostrophe in his name.
Next week on Hear That Podcast, Growler. All right, let's Growler Bet recap from this past weekend. We had a three-pronger for you of what milestone was going to happen first. It was, when does Joe Mixon cross 1,000? When does Ja'Marr Chase cross 1,000? Or does Trey Hendrickson get his sack to make it 9 straight games with a sack? Underdog Trey Hendrickson actually hit it with a sack on the first series, 13-34 in the first quarter. Quickest Growler Bet answer ever?
Oh, has to be. 86 yes. seconds into the game?
Yes. And we had one that almost got there. Had to be within 5 seconds. Uber Boog 88.
Looks good.
I got. said 12-21 in the first quarter for Trey Hendrickson. So close. So close. Kudos for picking it and being right there early in the game. You had the right idea, just didn't quite hit it where you needed to. So 50 West beer, not for anybody else. Maybe next week. Maybe next week.
I don't know what you got in email, but I only saw 3 Twitter responses that even picked Hendrickson as the correct prong. So that was
more.
Impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Most with Mixon. Mm-hmm. Most Mixon was sort of the
he was closest.
Mm-hmm. What did we say?
We both went Mixon. I was 11-11 first quarter, and you were in the 3-minute mark somewhere. I don't have that here in front of me, but
so I would have technically won that because actually I was closer on when Mixon did it. However, neither of us actually had the correct prong, so it's probably a wash. However, run passer boot results, Jay. What was our run passer boot from last week?
You did nail that one. It was which would be greater, 49ers rushing yards, Ja'Marr Chase catch percentage, or the 49ers longest run plus the 49ers longest pass. And the you ran with 49ers rushing yards, and that's what hit. They had 100. Ja'Marr Chase's percentage was 62.5, and the run plus pass combo was 52. Had a 27-yard run and a 25-yard pass.
I thought that number would be higher, though.
I did too. I ran with that. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be a lot higher.
That wraps that up, and that'll wrap us up. I hope everybody has enjoyed today's episode. Had a little bit of fun. We were a little off topic today, but I'll take that. You know, yeah. We did the extra. We were on topic yesterday with a little extra episode, so it gave us a little bit of flexibility to kind of stretch out and have a little bit of fun and change it up. We've got Denver coming up on Sunday, so we will be talking a lot about the game against the Broncos, a massive game in Thursday's episode, and so look forward to that, and we'll have more voices for you from the locker room on Wednesday, and we'll hear from Denver as well to get some inside information from the Broncos. So looking forward to bring all that to you on Thursday's episode. Thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.